Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The planets let them flash in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterfly, the honey bugs dug and licked the honeybee. The sun, the kiss, the funk for a bit, the lips with the soul and some jazz for your hip. The puff, the buzz, the lids be heavy slick, the mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat, the femmes fumble loose and drink the doodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damp, the people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk,
a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk,
a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk,
a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk, the big, the fat, the cool, cool cats, the psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name, the lack of the funk's the main, why we came. The boogie gets done, the colors won't run, the funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Wharf stop, the crew after crew that do the grasshop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat, the beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug's fix, the hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk,
a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
I said a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
The wide, the hip, dig it, it's the trip, the loop, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares, the baggy, baggy jeans, the naughty, naughty hair, the twinkle in the eye, the kids is living fly, the crew from the sky, the stuff to get you high, the action, the work for the rhyme, we goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the vapors get got, the streets get the buzz, the funk off your block, the opium groove, the smacked out soul, the kicking it live, the fat gotta roll with my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk,
a nickel bag of funk.
Yeah, it's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybugger hit you with a nickel bag. A
nickel bag,
a nickel bag.
Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag.
A nickel bag,
a nickel bag. Doodlebugger hit you with a nickel bag.
A nickel bag,
a nickel bag. DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
Welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. I am your host, Jeremy F., and of course, once again, I am joined by my lovely and talented co-host, Pam Ray, who, after being personally courted by the man himself, Dick Clark, she became such a fixture, such a fan favorite on the show, that there was a contingent, albeit a small one, but a very strong contingent that wanted to rename it from American Bandstand to American Pam Stand. Pam, how are you, my dear?
I am doing great, my friend, and how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Once again, I know I say it every week, but I am stoked for tonight's show. We got a couple incredible headliners to share with everyone, and I can't wait to introduce them. We have Bex Eggs and Cheese and Richard Weissman with us, correct?
That is correct. Welcome, Bex and Richard. Glad you could be here.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Hey, Bex, hey, Pam and Jeremy. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, Richard. Glad you could join us, man. This is going to be a great show, you guys. I think you both put together some incredible set lists, and I can't wait to dive in. Pam, is there anyone else on the line with us, or are we ready to get going?
We are ready to get going.
Perfect. We can do that. We are going to start tonight with Bex, your poetry. And I know that you have a ton. I loaded all of the SoundClouds that you sent us, and I know that you said you want to do some of these live, so I just want to be right by you and do these the way you want to do it. The first one I have is 12:30, but I don't believe I have a SoundCloud for that one. Would you like that one to be the first one that we share tonight?
Yeah, we should do that one.
Okay. I don't think we just have it as a SoundCloud, so you have to perform it is all I'm saying.
Okay. Right.
Does that work for you?
Yeah.
It is up and ready to go, and we'll follow along with you.
All right. I won't have the background music, so it's just going to be a cappella. So it'll be a little different. Excuse me. Okay, the first one is called 12:30. Some say words are a spell, but my wish you well haven't rung any bell. I guess it's 12:30 on the dot in heaven's motel. I've shed so many tears, and I've said so many prayers. I've banged on the roof of my bloody nightmare, and I can't say no one cares. There's just no gravity there. Somewhere looks farewell. I hope it's a farewell that leads me to you. For now, it's just 12:30 on the dot in heaven's motel. And I've shed so many tears, and I've said so many prayers, and I've banged on the roof of my bloody nightmare, and I can't say no one cares. There's just no gravity there.
That was amazing. Wonderful recitation. Pam, you want to start us off?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, beautiful singing as always, Bex. Wonderful rhyme and flow. I like how there's kind of a sentimental feeling to this. It actually, you know, at the mention of Heaven's Motel, it makes me think of the Elvis song Heartbreak Hotel. Also the idea of missing somebody who has passed on, and you know, hoping, and you know, that wish to and hope of one day being able to see them again. I particularly like, I've shed so many tears, I've said so many prayers, I banged on the roof of my bloody nightmares, I can't say no one cares, there's just no gravity there. Wonderful line on the idea of being pulled down by your emotions. And I like that you are such an emotive poet, so kind of raw in your presentation of emotions. And, you know, do you ever find that difficult to be so out there and open with emotions, especially, you know, like sadness, anger, heartbreak, those kind of things?
I found it hard to do in person sometimes, more so than I do in the music. I'm more awkward with sharing it. I know that sounds weird, but I get kind of shy about that, like in sharing it, because it always feels very personal. And I get worried that I'm going to share too much or that somebody's going to hurt me for sharing it. Like I worry more about that than sharing the emotion itself, if that makes sense.
You can understand that.
I feel like it feels like sometimes in this world that far too often, you know, it's kind of frowned upon. You know, it feels like that you should have this just happy, you know, just always in a party kind of demeanor. And fortunately, that's just not how life is. And I kind of hope sometimes with the music that I'm able to express that. Maybe somebody else can see it and get something out of it. And in that sense, I think that that's beautiful.
Great answer, Bags. Richard, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I love this, Bags. It's first things first. I wondered, half past 12, you know, this show, if you're on the East Coast, starts at half past 12. So I was wondering if this was just like the perfect opener for this show, or if it just was, you know,
I love
synchronicity or whatever. But beyond that, I love the bluesy feel to it. I love that you just pulled it out a cappella. You have a beautiful voice. I listened to one of your pieces earlier in the afternoon and was struck by the emotion in your voice. You found a way of putting emotion, as Pam accurately, I felt, said, putting emotion into the work through your voice, and it comes out in the song as well as the lyrics. And this one particularly had a beautiful bluesy vibe. Just took me back to 1930s Billie Holiday era. Really well done.
Thank you. Actually, wrote this, so I, my father passed away, and I just went blank for a minute, but he passed away from COVID. And so I was thinking about him when I wrote it, and I was also thinking about all those who have passed before him. You know, I've lost a brother, and I just recently lost my grandmother, and just, you know, how that is, sometimes you miss them, and that's kind of what the mentality was there for Heaven's Hotel. It's like, you know, they're not gone, they're somewhere, you know. just thinking about that, and that emotion comes from something very real for me.
I like that, Bex. And that was my question. I wanted to know what the backstory of all this is. But I have 1,000 questions for you, because you're so different than any of our headliners to date, because you're truly a songbird. And what I got in listening to not only your set list, but I also got lost in just following you on YouTube and just listening to an endless list of your songs as it went through. I mean, it was a great afternoon of listening to your stuff. What you put together is extremely, extremely talented. And what I wanted to say to start this off is the fact that you are branding yourself on a poetry website, when you obviously have such talent being a songstress, and even the production value that you put into everything that I saw on all of your SoundClouds, all of your YouTubes. I mean, you put a lot of work into that, and you could be trying to be on American Idol rather than showing the care that you have for your lyrics on a poetry website. And I think that speaks volumes, because there's not a lot, in my opinion, there's not a lot of musicians throughout the course of history that have taken a lot of pride in their words so much that they've headlined them, spotlighted them to stand alone. Like in looking at all your set lists and reading your words and understanding your poetry, it is poetry. It is beautiful lyrics that stand on their own. And the fact that you have such incredible, again, production value and vocal cords and really performing your work takes it to a whole other level. But first of all, I just want to commend you. I mean, I wanted to commend you on having pride in the composition. Like my two predecessors have already said, how much heart you put into all of your compositions. It shines through. I mean, it's beautiful stuff. And it takes you away. And then when we hear the backstory of what you just told us about your personal loss and all of that, I mean, that tugs on the heartstrings, and that's what it's all about.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's
a lot of that was why I started writing in the first place. I was going through a lot of stuff, and it just kind of all hit me. And that's what got me started writing. And I started writing initially, and I was just sharing it with a coworker. And my coworker's like, you need to publish this. And I kind of was like, I don't know about that. And then I did a search, and I found All Poetry. And so then I started writing and sharing on All Poetry. And then it just kind of snowballed on me. I didn't know where I was going to, you know, start. And that's all it was initially. It was just I was writing poetry and sharing it and joining contests. And I kind of got pulled into the rap free group and the rap tournaments that were going on at the time when I started. But even before that, I would notice sometimes when I was writing a poem, I would have a melody in my head. Just like a couple of the lines would stand out to me, and I would hear a melody to go with the line. And so originally I wasn't recording or putting things together like that. I was just, sometimes I would call into the blog talks and I would sing them all a cappella, or I would rap it a cappella, whatever that piece, you know, felt right for that piece. And it wasn't until Beat Wars, I think it was Afaciana that started doing the Beat Wars, that I realized, oh, wait, I can lease a beat, and I can write music to the beat. Oh, that's cool. And that just kind of opened up this whole other world. And just the way that's grown has been amazing and kind of took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it. It's just been kind of learning as I go and how to put all the pieces together and trying to recreate, like, what I hear in my head. And to be able to share that with other people.
I love it. Yeah, and I want to learn more about your process as we go further through this. You're going to have to tell me on which ones you want to do and which you not. The next one I have up is Oh, How Time Flies, and I believe we have a SoundCloud available for that, if I'm not mistaken. So you just let me know if you want to acapella it or if you want us to hit the button.
We can go ahead and do the SoundCloud. I can do it.
Okay.
All right, sounds good. Before I play the SoundCloud, I am going to go ahead and bring Afaciana on. So welcome, Afaciana.
Yes.
How glad you could join us.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi, Afaciana.
You're welcome, Fazy. Welcome.
Bex, that just made me so happy when you said Beat Wars influenced your music. I was like, I'm so proud of you.
But, I mean, it's all truth. It did. And I like Beat Wars a lot. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, whenever you're ready, Pammy, go ahead and hit the button on How Time Flies.
All right. I'm sorry. These are just particularly long titles, and I have so many that I'm going through them. All right.
It might not have made it because it was a SoundCloud, and Phil said that one of them didn't load. The first one didn't load. So we can do Gray Host if you want. Just move to the next one. Do you have Gray Host? And I know that one's available. And I'll post that on the board for everyone.
I can bring that one later if you want me to.
Okay. Yeah, we can come back to it. Mm-hmm. Do you have Gray Host on there, Pam?
I believe I saw one. Yes, I do. All right. Ready?
Yeah.
Tonight I lost myself, no one to blame but myself. I got caught up in my own insecurities. I've lost my peace. My mind is stuck in my bed and memories. Lightning struck my spine. Imperfection is right, and I won't make it out alive. to tell and see how I'll die, but it's a slow ride. My body's giving up on me, up on me. Why can't we not assume the worst of each other? Why do we tell ourselves we're not worth it when we are with so much more than our scars? But this life's so damn hard. We pick our own bones apart with notions that are far. Life is bleeding on my bars. Oh, there's a lighter. Oh, there's a lighter. Hold it high, hold it high in her honor, so unstoppable sponsor. Make this world offer so better for a daughter or a brother. Let's show them we've got love for each other. We suffer, why is it so damn hard to lift the cover? There's so much more beyond the struggle. This hustle, my heart is a muscle. It's been working too damn hard. But it's humble, even though it's bruised and scarred. It's still trying to light up the dark and make the spark. But it's always on guard, the parents call, yeah, it's hard when these scars are razor sharp. It has a gray smoke, so when I'm gone, just remember this gray hole scroll, trying to hold a light when she's cold. And her battery died, she just couldn't find a light. Why is it so damn hard to lift each other? There's so much more beyond the struggle. This hustle, my heart is a muscle. It's working too damn hard. But it's humble even though it's bruised and scarred.
What a great ending. Richard, you're up first. What do you have to say about this poem?
Yeah, so another really trippy piece. The piece that the SoundCloud didn't load for, I had actually heard that one earlier in the afternoon, and it struck me exactly how surreal it was. This one, I love the background music, the absence of horns, and the fact that your singing was very horn-like made it a perfect complement to the background music, which was very kind of spacey and, you know, and techno drum beat. I loved the horn quality of your vocals, if that made sense. And of course, the lyrics are very trippy and surreal as well. So I'm interested to hear the story behind the lyrics. Just another great piece.
Thank you. Were you waiting for me to share about that?
Absolutely.
There's a lot to unpack in this one. There's quite a few different things. So one thing that I struggle with is depression. And it's something that one of my brothers had struggled with, and, you know, mental health type things are something that have been prevalent in things that I've encountered a lot, not only growing up with my family and different things. And, you know, I think that influences a lot. And part of that's me talking about, you know, it's so hard in this world sometimes where, like, you know, for people to, you know, look past the surface or look past what they're going through. And to show empathy to those around them. And, you know, this is me just going, like, you know, why is it so dang hard? You know, why can't we, you know, care for each other and help each other? And, you know, talking about trying to find a light in that, but yet I've gone through a lot of trauma, and sometimes that makes that hard. hard to do, to even for myself, for me to open up and talk to people or express myself. And so that's kind of like, you know, a whole package here is just talking about that and holding a light up in the darkness and saying, you know, I may not be able to see everything, but, you know, I'm trying to hold the light up and maybe it'll help somebody else, even if it doesn't help me. And then, of course, during the time I wrote this, having a lot of trouble with my spine. So I have a degenerative spinal disease, and it runs in my family. And one of my family members is currently on hospice and has the same condition. And at that time, I was kind of struggling with that and thinking of, like, that's my future. You know, I'm already having, you know, trouble now with walking and with various things from that. And just like, oh, man, you know, that kind of brought me down. And I was thinking about all of that. And I just kind of, this beat resonated with that. And I just kind of put all of that out there and what I was feeling as in that moment.
Wow. Great honesty, Bex. I mean, that's what makes this show a success, when you're able to go that deep and share that much. Thank you for that story. Thank you for that background. That was beautiful. Yeah, again, I still have 1,000 questions I want to ask you about your production, but I got to, again, start from the beginning. I just giggled when I first came across your stuff, and all things being honest and open, Fazy's the one that brought you to my attention. She was begging me to get you on the show to headline, so all props go to Fazy. But when I became familiar with your work and your name, you've got to give me the background on why is it Bex Eggs and Cheese? That just makes me giggle every time I read your moniker.
Okay, so my real name is Rebecca. Okay, and for the longest time on All Poetry, actually from the entire time on All Poetry up until I released an actual single, I had my real name just out there. And I just had that there. And whenever I started working on music, and I got to a point where I was like, I want to try out releasing a single. I was like, oh, well, I have to have an artist name, and I can't really just have, like, my first name and last name. That's kind of weird. I mean, people do that, but it's not very memorable. And Beast actually used to call me Bex Egg and Cheese. And I was talking to her at the time and trying to come up with, like, artist names. And I don't remember, there was another thing she suggested, but I ended up going, because then I could just shorten it to Bex, and it's catchy, and it's memorable, and then, plus, it just made me smile, just Bex Egg and Cheese, because it was unique, too. Like, I didn't find, I was like, I don't think there's anybody else out there named Bex Egg and Cheese, so... And I tend to kind of be a little bit like of everything. You know, I don't feel that I fit like in a specific box. So like one write, I'm writing something and it's kind of like bluesy and jazzy. And then like, as my friend puts it so nicely, she's like, the next time I turn around, you're writing something and it's dexterous come out. And yep. She said I had two distinct music voices.
I love it. And see, and Hero was expecting that you're going to have a long story about how you used to work at Denny's. So that's much better than what I had envisioned. I love the tag. All right, fangirl. I'm going to release you, Fazy. You get to talk to her. What do you have to say about this poem?
Oh, I love this one so much. My body's giving up on me one piece at a time. I mean, I feel that as a chronically ill person. I connected with that. I really liked the way it sounded when you said there's so much more beyond the struggle, this hustle, my heart is a muscle. You have internal rhymes there that are a little bit subtle but also have, like, a big impact. Plus, I just like my heart is a muscle as, like, the concept. I gave you gold in this contest, and I stand by that gold. I think that you worked so well on this. It has, like, so much feeling. It's very deep. It's thoughtful. And, you know, it's an emotional roller coaster. But like I said in my original comment, it's not a downer to listen to, even though it's so sad, because it also, you're so freaking catchy. I mean, like 3 years later, I'm still going, meet motherfuckers, because like in this one song, she's saying that. I'll randomly be like swearing Becca's words. And I just, I love the way that you flow. You took the music and you made it your own. And yeah, you are like the hero of Beat Wars. So I'm so happy that you entered my contest.
Great comments, Daisy. Great comments. I love it. Pam, what do you have to say?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I'm cracking up laughing because Daisy, I was actually going to bring that poem up. I was going to tell Jeremy that if he hasn't listened to Meep Meep yet, he really needs to. You need to go to Beck's page when you get a chance and listen to her song Meep Meep, because me and Faizy were on the same show the first time we heard it, and I still to this day every once in a while I have Meep Meep motherfuckers. Bounce into my head.
I love great, that. I love that.
But, yeah, no, and this one is very relatable. I think that's one of the true gifts about poetry or songwriting, is that you get to let people know that they're not alone. I really like how you use spacing in this to create like a sense of a pause or slowing down. Life is bleeding on my bars, so flip a lighter. Hold it high, hold it high in her honor, so another ghost will find her. You know, I feel like, you know, those lines to me in a way, it like pay dedication to those who lost the battle against depression, who died from suicide. And I know you didn't specifically say that, but you brought up depression, and that's what kind of comes to my mind. Now, a lot of times on the show, what I'll do is I'll ask people classic poets that inspire them. But with you, I do want to ask, because you are a songwriter, what songwriters, you know, inspire you? And then if you have any classic poets that inspire you, please feel free to share that also.
I listen to kind of like a little bit of everything. I really like Mazzy Star. I like Portishead, and I think it's kind of all over the place. My playlist kind of spans a lot of different genres, but I do love those two very particular, and also really like Saw Rock. I'm trying to think. I'm going to just pull my playlist up because I have it, and I listen to some of them. When I'm writing, though, so I try very hard not to listen to other music while I'm writing music, because I want it be more focused on maybe the instrumental and whatever emotions I'm feeling, and try and not to copy, if that makes sense. Like, sometimes I might hear a piece and get that can inspire me, but I try not to listen to music actively when I'm writing. My own.
I get that.
Let's see. Well, thinking. So found it. I like to listen to a lot of German music by Leah. I like L.E.J., and they do, what's it called, mashups between various like hip-hop artists, as well as German as well. I like Rammstein, which is German metal. And I like Eminem, some Tom McDonald, Alan Walker, and Macklemore. Just like, it's just all over the place. And I like Viking like music as well. Like, so if you've ever heard of the band, the Viking band Skull, they do like old Norse style songs. I like to listen to that quite a lot. And I just really love it when artists mesh English with other languages. I think it's really beautiful. And I love to hear that. And Hailstrom is another one. That was probably a long response, but.
No, I like it, though. I like it. That's really
like,
cool.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of all over the place. Like, it's everything from, like, metal to, like, really heavy metal, so like Deathclock, for example. I love Deathclock, and but then I also love the Pretty Reckless and Rammstein as well. It's just like, it's different. The only thing I don't really like to, or tend to listen to a whole lot of is country.
I knew you were going to say that.
That is the only, now there are exceptions to that, like on some that I listen to, but that's kind of the, it's not what I gravitate. I really struggle. Like, I've tried a few times to write country music, and with the exception of Orchid ACI, which was a complete accident, I was not trying to write anything at all country. That just happened. Every time I've tried, it sounds just awful.
Well, you found a kindred spirit in Pam because she's also a huge Rammstein fan. In fact, if we get lucky tonight, we'll get her to do her cover of Du Hast because she can really belt out the lyrics.
I love Rosenrot as well. I love Rosenrot.
See, Pam? Oh. See? There is a chance for you to sing.
You know, the thing about Rosenrot that I love the most is that Rosenrot is like, it is so dark. Like, it sounds beautiful and like awesome, like guttural or whatnot, but the meaning behind that song is just incredibly dark. You get a kind of an idea if you watch their music video, but the translation to it is pretty dark.
Ah!
But before we jump into the next one, Bex, I want you to give you a chance to shamelessly plug yourself. I mean, can you tell us, I know that you're on SoundCloud, I know you're on YouTube, but also your poetry as well. Do you have anything published with your poetry in terms of book form? And can you tell us all the avenues in which we can enjoy your work?
I have a few things published poetry-wise, I think, but most of those are like compilations. So I think recently there was a published piece on Amazon that was from the Rat Free group. I don't have the link handy, but I know that Faye, she has it probably. And I just ordered my copy the other day. And then I have a few other compilations, but I don't have any books that are just like my poetry. And then I have one song on Spotify and all major platforms. And soon there will be more. Oh, thank you.
And to find your work on those other platforms, we look you up under Bex, simply Bex. Is that correct?
On YouTube, Bex Egg and Cheese. There is another Bex that started her YouTube channel after me. And I kind of joked the other day that she's like the red pill version and I'm blue because like in my picture, my hair's blue and in her picture, she's got red hair. So, but yeah, if you look for Bex Egg and Cheese, it should come up on YouTube. But if you look on my old poetry profile, here. I have a link tree that has all the links. I would just share that. But that is also on my All Poetry profile as well. And any more links, I will add to that. So I have one link that has all of them on there.
Perfect. All right. Well, we're ready for the next one.
I had that.
Okay.
Fairly
I think
new.
We're...
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you. No, go ahead. We have the rest of the next one ready.
The next one. What's the next one?
The next one is Sha-na-na. Sha-na-na-na. And we have a SoundCloud on that one, I believe, Pam.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes, we do. All right. Let me go ahead and find that one. All right. Here we go.
I'm tree, chasing love and energy. Heads off looking funny while working 9 to 5. Shout out to my daughter, pick your feet up, who's the dance. Yeah, shout out to my nephew, pick your feet up, need a dance. Sha-na-na-na, sha-na-na-na, pick your feet up, dance.
Chairs just like I was. That one was a booty shaker. Great song. One of the things that I really liked was when Pam's other question about your motivation, your influences, rather, both song-wise and in terms of a poet. When I was listening to your stuff, inherently, I think when we listen to music, we try to put it in that box, right? We try to classify it and make it part of an already existing genre. And I'm wondering if I mean, I definitely want to say the names of the other artists that your music reminds me of, but I'm wondering if that affects your poetry. I mean, do you feel like by trying to fit into this stylized music that you have, and I think even Richard has said it, I think you do venture out and you do have rap, you do have blues, there is variety in your music. But beyond that, do you find that being hooked to the melody that you might have in your head when you're writing or whatever actually affects the content of the poetry or the lyrics that you're writing?
If I'm listening to the same type or genre of music, I think it totally can while I'm listening to. Even if we're not intentionally doing, I think subconsciously it definitely can. I do get compared a lot, but it doesn't really affect me in that way. Especially when I'm writing to beats and stuff, because what I usually tend to do is, like, I'll put that beat on, like, if I'm working with a pre-existing beat, like a license, I'll put that beat on all day. I'll listen to it while I'm working. I'll listen to it in the evening. And sometimes that might go on for several days before I even write anything. And then something hits me or I have a mood or something, I'm thinking about something and I know, oh, I need to write. Now's the time to write. And then I sit down and write. But I've already been listening to that beat over and over again. So that's what's in my head rather than something else. But I think even then, subconsciously, the things that I have listened to over the years and stuff still do influence me in some way. But I think by having that variety, it helps, like, make it uniquely me. If that makes sense.
That's a great answer. And I think anyone that has the strength to put the name Schmeagle in a song gets double props. Faizy, what do you have to say?
I was also going to point out the Schmeagle thing, the Schmeagle dance. I was picturing the Schmeagle dance, and I love it. That really stuck out to me. I also love the repetition of rhythm, pulse, and poetry, and the way that you say that line, sing that part is just amazing. Rhythm, pulse, and poetry, I can't do it the way you do, but I love the way that your voice goes when you say that, and I love the words. I like that you referenced your loved ones dancing Diamonds in the Sky, so the ones that you've lost, and also the ones by your side, and just, like, recognizing that both are important. And then I really like, shout out to these Mad Ones Struggle, Gripping Silent Nights, because, you know, you've talked before about, like, working through depression and all the difficult times, but you're singing your way through, you're dancing your way through, you know, getting your daughter and your nephew to dance along with you, and not let them get caught up in the grime and grind of life, because you're getting everyone dancing, and I think that's something that you're really good at. So I love this.
Thank you.
Great comment, Faizy. What do you have to say, Pam?
Oh, this is absolutely wonderful. This is definitely, as you said, Jeremy, a booty-shaking song. I love how fun this is, the mention of the Schmeagle dance and the Sha-na-na's added in. I also like that there is, you know, those serious points, like the shout-out to the people amongst the stars. Beautiful. I'm just fun, creative lines all the way through. I have to say, to me, rhythm, pulse, and poetry, chasing love and energy, even though this isn't anywhere near a reggae beat, those lyrics make me think of Bob Marley, or, you know? Like, it feels like something Marley would sing about, love and energy and rhythm and, you know, poetry. And I really like that. I also like dance like diamonds meeting my thighs, Lord Bless Maya's Rising in Life, a wonderful little tidbit that pays dedication to Maya Angelou. So I really liked that. That was wonderful. And so I'd like to know what got you into poetry writing or lyric writing?
Well, originally it's just I had a whole bunch of stress and I wasn't trying to write poetry. I was just writing down my thoughts. And now when I was in high school and stuff, I did write poetry, but it was kind of the same kind of thing where I was just like, grab a piece of paper and I was just, there was no structure to it. It's all free verse. Like everything was just free verse. I mean, even now, most of the time it's all still free verse. And now I don't do paper so much. It's instead like I do digital. And I just pull up a notepad or whatever it might be, like an Evernote or something, and just start listening and typing and pour out the thoughts. And then I might go back and revisit it and work on the structure. But it was just a way to kind of vent. I just get the emotions out of me. Because everything had built up. So much stuff had happened in my life. It had built up to a point that it felt like I was going to explode. You know, and I just kind of felt like sometimes I was about to lose my mind because I'm holding it all in. And this was kind of an outlet where I could just pour it out of my system. And I felt better doing that. And then it became fun. And then it was like, oh, now I'm enjoying this. Not only do I feel better, but I'm enjoying it. And then I started kind of branching out and becoming more like, playing around with it and having fun with the words and figuring out, like, well, I said this when I wrote it out, but can I say that prettier? Is there another word out there that's, like, different, that's, you know, not used very often? And so I'd go through and look through dictionaries and, like, learn new words and go, oh, I like how that sounds. I'm going to use that, you know? And then sometimes I would think about, like, the rhyme scheme or try to, like, put hidden messages in. And I'm so glad you mentioned Maya Angelou, because so far I was hoping somebody caught that, because that shout out to her, because there is a beautiful thing that she has about, it says that, like, does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise up from a past that's rooted in pain. I rise on a black ocean, leaping and wild, welling and swelling, I bear in the tide. Like, that's a quote from a Maya Angelou poem called Still I Rise. And it's, you know, her talking about the struggle and yet still dancing through it, dancing anyway, no matter what has been thrown at her, she's still dancing. And I thought that was really beautiful.
Absolutely. Great comments, Bex. And it's funny. I mean, everyone gets into poetry for different reasons, and I'm always surprised how many people always comment on the fact about how cathartic the experience is. So I'm really like that you touched on that piece of it, because – yeah, there's a lot of people that say the same thing. I think it's a very, very freeing exercise. So, very cool. Richard, your comments.
Yeah, I love that you included a dance tune. And I'm going to just echo the verse that everyone has been mentioning. Shout out to my family who's always by my side. The mad ones struggle. Gripping silent night, shout out to the loved ones, dancing diamonds in the sky. So in Aboriginal cultures, shamanic cultures, dance is not only performed for us, the dancers, in order to, you know, bring us into this sacred space, but also for our ancestors in order to heal ancestral trauma. So I don't know if that was conscious on your part, but it just really struck a chord for me. And damn, I felt like dancing in my chair. Absolutely.
It wasn't conscious in that context, but I think that's beautiful and fitting. And had I known that was a thing, I probably would have still, you know, done that intentionally. I love that. I love that a lot.
Great comments, Richard. Very cool. We definitely have a time for another one. So it is up. I believe we have another song called for this one, Artistic Savage.
Oh, before you touch that one, I did want to mention something.
Sure.
So
go ahead.
Smeagol and Goose reference are actually nicknames for my kids. Smeagol
cool.
has a story tied to it that I can tell y'all later if we have time. But Goose is like Silly Goose. Like we call my daughter Silly Goose, and that's been a nickname. And I didn't want to put their real names in it because I was sharing it in a public setting like that. And so I shared their nicknames so that it was when they, because they get excited every time I get a new song put on YouTube because they want to look it up on the TV and play it. And so this was specifically for them, and I wanted them to have something in it that was unique to them, but yet without putting their actual names in it.
I like that. I like that added personalization. That's very cool. Right on. Pam, the next one, Artistic Savage, is ready when you are to pull it up, please.
All right. Sounds good. Here we go.
Thank you. He's a crack of awesome, how you say it, but we'll show us that we're through. You'll see time like a roof and 20 feet of fabric pages. But I think I break it, censoring the first hate and acidifying swallows to the window. Serving out my slide. Are you confused? How would John just get faster than me? My father's absent, absolutely, it comes from my chest. Eat you better, a slip of dream. I'm sick of when I'm lived, I need past the kiss. No, I'm just addicted to the rush to my conscience. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Cigarettes and souls, when you flip your brain is full. But you will flip to a flash of any glitter.
Daisy, start us off.
Okay, I love the line, I'm just addicted to the rush to my conscience. And the first time she said that, I, like, highlighted it on my screen, so I'm like, I don't remember to talk about this. And then it repeats again at the end, and I was like, yes, like, drive that home. I love it. I also really liked near the beginning, where is it? Shrouding smoky membranes with wispy strands wrapped fragments. It's just like there's something about that where I can actually like picture it. That imagery is really striking and uniquely worded. And the well, depression hollows, heartbreak smooth. My vermouth's 100 proof of doldrums drumming bruised. I just love the way that's worded. This has like a really distinct and unique style to it, and I enjoy that.
Great points, great comments, Daisy. Pam, what do you have to say about this poem?
Yeah, this is an amazing dark write. I like how there's a couple different ideas that I get from it. The idea of somebody who's kind of lost in their path and who's dealing with addiction. I really like, but I think that greatness is a real sick bird hating bastard flying swallows to the window, blurring art with splattered. Blurring art with splattered makes me think of Jackson Pollock and his artwork. And I like how you say, but I think that greatness is a real sick bird hating bastard because, first of all, wonderful alliteration there. But also it gives the idea that, you know, getting everything you want doesn't always turn out for the best. Like you may rise up in greatness, but for some people, they can't handle that. You know, just really great lines all the way through and very well done.
Great compliment. Richard, what are your comments on this one?
Yeah, I love this piece. I thought it was a very powerful confessional rite. It had shadow being unveiled, brought front and center, and just very strong emotion, which actually I can see throughout most, you know, throughout virtually all of your work, is that attention to emotive writing, and it especially comes out very powerfully right here.
Great comments, Richard. And what I really also enjoy, especially about this one, Bex, is, you know, it's hard with a lot of music to not timestamp it. And you use, because, again, that you're such a poet in your lyrics that it doesn't feel that way. I mean, beyond the beat, beyond the stylistic way that you're doing it, which obviously is going to be trapped or associated with a genre, your music, your words have more of a timeless feel, if that makes sense, because you are putting such thought and care, like Faizy pointed out, in the certain repetition that really struck a chord with her. I mean, there is that added effort, and it shines through. And so I think as a lyricist, you're head shoulders above a lot of other of your contemporaries because of that effort, because of that extra care, because of the fact that you're into Maya Angelou, the fact that you were paying attention and you're putting so much heart and so much, again, care and thought into your lyrics. I really like that, and I think there's so much value to that, and I think beyond your talent, again, as a singer, I like the content so much that it's turned me into quite a fan. I really dig it. And what I want to make sure we touch upon is, can you just talk about the production of your music just a little bit? Like, tell us what that process is like. It's so different than everything else we discuss on the poetry side. When you're singing, like, how many people are involved in the production of it and the beats and all that? Can you just do a quick run-through on what goes into producing these songs?
So the overall, like, the beat parts, usually I get it from a variety of places, but most often I'll go to, like, BeatStars, or I'll go to YouTube, and I'll just scroll through beats when I want to write a song, and I'll just keep scrolling until I hear something that resonates with me. And I usually only listen to, like, first 10 seconds of the song most of the time, like, as I'm going through. I'll click on it, and I go, nope, don't like that one, you know, and I'll go on, and I'll keep doing that, and then I'll hear one, and I'll go, I think I might like that one, and then I'll listen to it all the way through. And if I like it, I'll go, I think I can work with that. And then if it's on BeatStars, I just download it, and then I put it in what we call the DAW, which is a music mixing software, which I've used BandLab, which is free, and it's nice, but lately I've been doing a lot with a different DAW called Logic Pro, but I've used a bunch of different ones. And then I just kind of, as I mentioned earlier, it's like I'll listen to that beat over and over and over and over again, however many times I need to, until I feel like I'm ready to write. And then when I'm ready to write, I'll pull up a notepad and I'll just start listening. I'll put the beat on repeat and I'll start writing whatever is coming and what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, and go with it and see where it takes me. And sometimes I'll have the hook right away. Sometimes I don't have the hook until later, and sometimes I don't have a hook at all. Like, the structure can be all, it just depends on the beat and what feels right to me. And I'll just keep doing that process of writing and listening and writing and listening. And when I have a substantial amount of that written, and I think I kind of have a firm grasp of, like, okay, I think I know where I'm going, then I'll take those lyrics and I'll hit the record button and I'll record a rough draft and just kind of feel my way through it, what the melody is going to sound like, what it is, and just kind of pour out of me, like, it's a freestyle thing, and then I'll play it back and listen to it and see if I like kind of where it's headed. And there might be I didn't like that part, or I might listen through the first time and go, oh, I really like that. Now can I record it where I don't have, like, birds chirping in the background, or dang it, the dog was barking, you know, because for early on when I was recording, I didn't have a music recording space at all. My husband built me one. But early on, I would go on my front porch sometimes at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning and pull out my laptop or whatever it is, and I would pull it up and record that way. Or I would take off and hide in the bedroom and shut the door and lock it and try to record there. And so especially some of my early recordings, you can hear that in the background. Like, sometimes you will hear, like, a dog bark, or you can hear the kids in the background, or there was one I did, and it was raining outside, and it sounds almost like I'm in a bathtub. I think that was Evolve Love. I recorded this song called Evolve Love, and it did. It does. Beast was like, it sounds kind of like you're in a bathtub. It's like, no, I was actually on the front porch, and it was raining outside. And I just went with it. I just kind of made that part of the piece.
I love it. I love listening to your stuff, too. I mean, this has been quite a treat. An hour never seems long enough, so we didn't make it very far down your set list, but thank you so much for sharing. And I would love for you to you're incredibly talented, both as a poet and as a songbird. I think you definitely got a fan in me. I encourage everyone to at least, at the minimum, check the rest out of Beck X and Cheese's set list that she provided for the show tonight. And if you're like me, you'll get lost in much more of her work that's available on SoundCloud and YouTube. She's very talented and puts together some beautiful, beautiful stuff. Bex, thank you so much for headlining. We'd love for you to stick around with us for the second hour if you can. If not, we understand. But we have the next poet. Go ahead.
I would love to, but it is almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and I have to work.
That's understandable. Thank you so much for spending the first hour with us. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Our next poet, you bet. Our next poet is Richard Wiseman. We're excited, Richard. Thanks for hanging out so late as well. I know you, you're on deep in the early hours of tomorrow morning. So your first poem is ready and queued up when you are.
Okay. Well, thanks again for showcasing my work. So it's a weird story, this poem. It was a contest that was being held by a combination of sponsors for the annual Loquat Festival here in Florida. And I almost didn't write for it because I was like, Loquats, come on. And as it turns out, this is the one that just keeps getting recognition and published everywhere. So I kind of feel like it now is my signature piece, ironically. And it goes like this. It's called Mountain Bird and Loquat. Chinese mountain bird's white belly hungers for sweet. The fragrant yellow loquat magnets him, steady perched midst fragile gnarled branches, near enough to feed. Yet he wavers uncertain, black eyes, quick dart all round, ever mindful, ever searching, lest he fall prey. He longs for safety of nest, but loquat's aroma and sun-yellowed color again call. Bravely he beaks through downy, red-blushed skin, emboldened by succulent, tangy, sweet, white-yellow flesh. He repeats until full, now soars skyward to home, readies for night, while broken, sun-yellowed loquat remains. Exposed brown seas weep ever earthward, sacrificial in dimmed light. End of poem.
Great read. And I love that. I loved your author's note, and I love the fact that you gave us that little preface to this poem, because that was really kind of – that was my first kind of bait question on this. I wanted to know about the contest. Congrats, honestly. Obviously, I mean, it's awesome that you're getting so much kudos for this poem, and it continues to be part of your life. But, yeah, the loquat, I would have felt the same way. And the first time I read this, I thought, this is a beautiful poem about a bird, and he did a great job of describing it, and it stands on that merit alone. But I'm dying to know, this has to – well, it doesn't have to be, but is there a greater metaphor behind all of this? Because the tone of it was so strong for me that I'm dying to know what else you were thinking about with this poem.
Yeah, so it archetypally, the loquat represents the martyred god. So Christ, Cyrus, and mountain bird represents the hero. So I'm very influenced by mythology and Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces. So, you know, like Ulysses, Homer's Ulysses, or Hamlet, or Buddha. Those are the two archetypes, symbols for the players. Because I didn't know how the hell to write a poem about a loquat. So obviously it had to have something playing with it, which was the mountain bird.
Perfect. No, I love that. And, yeah, I mean, we can talk more about Joseph Campbell as we go deeper on, because I noticed other mythological themes in some of your poetry. I was nerding out about him before I even understand what I was learning because of the Star Wars influence that he had and all of that. So, yeah, it's cool that the Joseph Campbell has an influence in your writing. Fazie, are you still with us tonight?
I am.
Would you like to comment on this poem?
Yes. I thought it was beautiful, and I do think it works on multiple levels. Like, if it was just describing a bird, it would be, you know, a beautiful story of this bird, and like just eloquent and great description. But there's one part. But loquat's aroma and sun-yellowed color against call, bravely he beaks through downy red blush skin emboldened by succulent, tangy, sweet, white-yellow flesh. That felt, like, really sensual to me. Maybe it's just me. I have a dirty mind. But to me, that section felt like it was sensual. And then reading your AN and listening to you talk, thinking about it as the martyred god and all the mythological meanings, I took on a whole new layer rereading it, and I love that because I did feel like there was something deeper that I wasn't quite getting at first, and then making those connections, I really like it because I was not familiar with loquat. Honestly, if you had said loquat out of context, I would not have known what that is, but now I do in multiple ways, so I really appreciate this piece.
Thanks, Fazie.
Yeah, great comments, Fazie. Pam, what do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, it's so great that we're able to feature you, Richard, and your poetry, because I've always been a big fan. You know, I love the way that your poetry is oftentimes what I would call deceptively simple. Like, it seems like it's just straightforward, as was mentioned, but then you realize that there's those deeper metaphors. And I like your explanation of the Christ and Buddha archetypes. You know, to me, I saw within this idea of sacrifice being made, this idea of being both the hunter and the hunted, and how that so many, there's this idea to me of just feeling unsafe. I particularly like near enough to see, yet he wavers uncertain, black eyes, quick dart all around, ever mindful, ever searching, lest he fall prey. I think there's a wonderful personification in that, in the representation of fear. And you definitely do have a brilliant use of imagery and metaphors. And so what I'd like to ask you is, do you have favorite poetic devices and least favorite poetic devices?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the whole like metered structure, I always felt handcuffed by it. And so I definitely have avoided anything like that. Although sometimes, you know, it'll kind of sneak in. I try and stay away from anything like that. So that's least favorite. And then favorite, I am definitely a modernist. So my big influences are like James Joyce, William Burroughs, and nowadays even more Bukowski. I've always loved him, but I'm kind of on a Bukowski kick now. Devices, I guess I really like wordplay and double entendre, and I guess that kind of harkens back to what Joyce was doing. And I like having hidden symbolism, because one thing I always committed myself to was that I was never going to talk down to the reader. What they get is what they get, and that's great, but I'm not going to dumb it down in order to get a bigger audience. So, and I've always stayed true to that.
I like that. Very cool.
And yeah, it's so easy to get on a Bukowski kick. I mean, I'm not a smoker, but yeah, you can get into Bukowski, grab a glass of scotch, light up a cigarette, and just lose hours. So that's cool that he's one of your one of your influences. Your next poem is Up and Ready When You Are, my friend. Now lost in translation.
Okay. So, yeah. So this piece, in terms of plugging, so we've got a show on Late Night Poets, and it's called In Our Craft or Sullen Art. And that is from a line from my favorite poet, Dylan Thomas. And my old co-host, Laurent, said, you know, it's time we did a Dylan Thomas contest for our show. And so this poem was written specifically for that contest in order to celebrate the work of Dylan Thomas. It's called Old Music of Words, Now Lost in Translation. Old songs paint white sorrows, blown cold along that windy shore. Pricked ears recount blue heron's call. Gone are the days when marcher lords still heave their brawny chests. Through ancient castles dank and hushed, which drank dead Catholic rains till quenched, till Harry's son knit England's lion with threads drawn taut, where battle-weary Welsh wolfhound once did flame. Dead tongues still flutter there, from fam to heir, through time-tattered centuries, sins threaded by gray mockingbirds' winged climb. Soar west now cross their craggy mountain heights, beyond shire valleys deep and green, ever yearning for their never-frozen salt-heavy air, off Irish sea and Bristol channels past. Old songs whose lyrics echo hollow in seashell translation now lay tethered to a second cast accent, forever distilled in whiskey-hardened casks. Dead drunk and dizzy in tall towered foreign peaks, though their music of words rings full with eternity's seafoam rhythm. Now swept through by chapel-sainted iron foundry bells, black mockingbird eyes vainly search still past gray concrete spires for a western mountain perch. Their tired talons soar ever skyward beyond gray fog of the dying town. Listen through blares of their lorry horn emptiness. Still they sing these blood-rich madrigals of their inmost tongue's hard wail. Are they lost in translation or merely searching for that high hill as the years turn and their bones grow white? End of poem.
Excellent performance, Richard. That was wonderful. Faizy, start us off.
Okay, I love the line, dead tongues still flutter there. And then my favorite part is the stanza that starts with old songs whose lyrics. The idea that, you know, it's lost over the years, the meaning of the initial song or even story as things get passed down. It's like playing that telephone game when you're kids, and every time it gets told, a little bit changes, and it ends up losing the intention. I really liked forever distilled in whiskey hardened cast, dead drunk and dizzy and tall, towered foreign peaks through their music of words. And, you know, some songs and stories that would have traveled around, you know, traveling bards, if we're talking like the old times like that, it changes from place to place. And, you know, if your audience is kind of the drunk peasants who aren't thinking about what the first person was going through, then it gets a little bit lost, and it just becomes like, oh, this is a fun song that we sing as a drinking song, and loses the power of its original. But then later on, as the years turn and their bones grow white with truth, it's like maybe someone is discovering this old song and really appreciating it for what it truly was. And I know that happens. I'm in some historical reenactment groups of, like, medieval times, and we dig up old music and old poems and try to, like, dig into them and figure out, like, what their context was and all of that. And somewhere there is a nerd like me appreciating an old song. So I really, really love this poem.
Great comment, Sadie. Pam, what do you have to say?
Yeah, this is amazing. Wonderful imagery throughout. But I like that it's not just about the imagery, but about the sounds, you know, about the lorry horn and the old songs and the, you know, all the different sounds throughout history. You know, and I like that you delve into a history that's haunting and nostalgic. I did particularly like Dead Tongues Still Flutter There, from Fam to Air, through Time Tattered Centuries, Thin Threaded by Gray Mockingbird's Winged Climb. You know, there's so much idea to me of the strengths of a people who go through a difficult time. So beautifully written here, Richard, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
And that really is a great comment, Pam, because I felt the same way. I mean, there was so much to this that I want to talk to you about, Richard. First of all, I think you nailed the Dylan Thomas. I think he's a rock star. I think if he was around today, he'd be freaking hitting the stage and getting the kids bouncing, because he has a brashness to him, but a brashness with heart, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of that's even captured in the picture that you included with this poem. But you want to follow along with him. And the story of this, and obviously his ancestry and where he comes from, I think you captured all of that in this poem. But what Pam said about the sounds of it, about this particular poem, and all of your set list tonight, I was really struck by it. And I'm going to butcher how I'm going to try to explain this. But I'm a real nerd for words, and I love sound. I like the poetic devices. I like assonance, consonance, rhyme, alliteration. But I also like the shape of words. I like how they connect. And you did some connections, and it really became apparent to me when you did your performance that just really captured my imagination. The third line in the second, through ancient castles, dank and hushed, and then followed with, which drank dead Catholic rains till quenched. That fourth line, I don't know how else to describe what other adjective, except it's pointy, it's sharp, and it grabbed me. Just the combination that you used in that, it was so unique, but it was so deliberate and intriguing to me. I really enjoyed that. And then you made another move much later in the poem that was really simple. Oh, rings full with eternity's sea foam rhythms. For some reason, the connections of your words, the sea foam rhythms, and how it went with the breakup of eternity, it was very poetic, for lack of a better term. And I really liked how you, whether it was intentional, I'm always going to assume it's intentional when it comes to poetry or not. I think your word choice and how you, in the composition of this, I was lost in it, and the way you performed it really just it really gripped me. I enjoyed it immensely. Wonderful poem. Can you talk a little bit? I have two quick questions. The first one, I want you to do a shameless plug and just say, in your author's notes here, you said that it was published. Can you speak about how this one was picked up and what it was published in, real quick?
Yeah. So there was a Romanian lit professor who was just asking for for poems and for literary criticism, which I do. I write a lot of literary criticism. So if you go to my page, you can kind of see some articles and essays that I've written. So she asked for a poem or a bunch of poems, and this was one of them. So it got published there. I don't know. I think since COVID, for whatever reason, I don't know what happened, but that site is no longer operational. It could be a money thing too, because it does cost money to keep websites going year after year. But nevertheless, I've had, you know, poetry is a thin, it's a thin art form. So anytime you have someone championing your work, it's a wonderful thing. And she did it for quite a few years. So I definitely want to plug her and hope that she's still out there doing it. And in terms of shameless plugs, another big champion of my work is a guy named Robin Hislop. And he runs a magazine called Poetry, Life and Times and Art Villa. And he's always been very kind and generous in terms of showcasing my work. So check that out as well.
Right on, man. No, that's what this show is all about. I want you to plug away and let us just totally understand where you're coming from. So please continue to let us know where we can find all of your stuff. That's awesome. And then my other quick question is, we've noticed it in this poem and in the previous one, you choose your inspiration from, and then we'll see it through the rest of the body, from different prompts, but your take on these prompts always is something that I would never, you come from a different angle that I would never expect. Can you tell me a little bit more about where you find your inspiration or what you look to be the muse of your poems? Do you have a common avenue, or are you just looking, going to all poetry contests, or where do you usually find your muse?
Mm-hmm. So I am a historian before anything else. So I studied history and specifically the modern era, with an emphasis of the era from 1914 to 1945. Of course, that is my ancestors too. That's my parents' and grandparents' generation. And so that's part of the story behind this poem, is that there's the ancient story of the Marcher Lords and Harry's son, Henry VIII, making English the official language of Wales and turning that Welsh tongue into a dead tongue, dead language. But it also echoed through my own family's history, that when they emigrated over from Russia to London's East End in the 1880s, they spoke Yiddish. They didn't speak English. And they lost that language. So old music of words now lost in translation. Yes, it's a historical story that I'm telling that resonates to Dylan Thomas's history, but it also is very personal. And so I think that's probably a theme that threads through most of my work, is that I take history and I make it personal, because I feel like that's how history comes to life, is when I can make the reader feel something on a personal level and feel the emotions that I'm feeling.
Very well said. I love that answer. Alrighty, my friend, your next poem, Ginger Next Time, is available and ready when you are.
Okay. Okay, so my mom got sick during COVID and eventually passed away. And this was written during the early phase of her illness, and it's called Ginger Next Time. In 2000, you filled the living room with Virginia Slim's smoke as Kundun aired. A Tibetan boy chimed a brass bell across your wide screen. This is mine. Nod of the maroon-robed monk as I gestured to the TV. The Dalai Lama believes in reincarnation. You retorted, if I can't be Ginger Rogers, I ain't coming back. 20 years later, as you're running out of breath, I can't visit or hug you one last time, lest COVID-19 rides along. Instead, I'll call again. We'll talk of stocks or bonds, and I'll hear how you're proud that I saved all those jobs down south, so you'll never get derivatives or commercial hedging. Now I pray, not for your lengthened breath or days, with bleak promises of darker pain and deeper isolation, nor for your cough or miraculous remission, but instead for your peace and joy. I pray not for Fred Astaire with gaudy dinner jacket and black bow tie, not for his toothy smile or uptown flair. My prayer is for dancing blonde locks, black heels, flowing sequin gown and savoir-faire, for she did it all, same as him, but backwards and in high heels. No, I'll not pray for Fred, nor even Kundun. I echo your prayer, Mom. Ginger next time. End of poem.
Another great read, Richard. Wow. Pam, would you start us off with the comments, please?
Yeah, this is one that definitely pulls at the heartstrings. I love that quote. Remember, Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards and in high heels. And I think this is a wonderful dedication to your mother, because it's raw, it's real, and it's not all about the seriousness, although there is definitely plenty of that, is rightfully so. But you bring to us, you know, your mother's and in yours what seems to be a shared sense of humor. In that idea of you retorted, if I can't be Ginger Rogers, I ain't coming back. I love that line. And there is such a profoundness to this and such a wonderful sense of knowing that sometimes there are things that we know it's just, you know, you don't want to pray for someone to live longer if it's going to hurt them. There's a sense of being loving and unselfish within this rite. And my question is, it's just a general question, so how did you get started in writing poetry?
So I think I started really, really young. I'm the youngest of four siblings. My eldest sister is a really, really good painter and artist, and went to the Baltimore Art Institute and continues to, you know, be really great in that realm. And all three of my siblings are really talented musicians. My brother's also a really good photographer, and my other sister is a pretty well-known character actor who studied under Stella Adler. So the other art forms, I just, as the youngest, I felt really dwarfed, you know, like they were already older than me and they were good at these things and I wasn't. But writing kind of just seemed like that could be my thing. And so I gave it a shot and I just kind of fell in love with that. I fell in love with storytelling and just studied different writers and fell in love with the stories that they told. So.
Very cool.
And yeah, I'm like Pam too. I've always
enjoyed this quote. It seems like I've always remembered it from forever ago, and it has such confidence. It has a braggadocious feel, but it also has humor to it, right? And when you combine that with the incredible amount of heart that you have, love and dedication in this ode to your mom, when you combine that quote with that love, it's not a combination. It's not a marriage. It's not the composition that one would definitely put in the recipe book for creating a poem, because it's very different to nail those kind of conflicting emotions and have it be successful. But you do, man. I mean, this poem, you're smiling while you're crying, you know, because, yeah, you touch on the personal connection that you have with your mother, and it makes everyone else want to pick up the phone and call their mom. You know, everyone wants to have that kind of connection. It's really special. It's really sweet. It's tender, and it hits in all the right spots. So, yeah, I love this poem. I love the quote ahead of time. I love the fact that that was part of the inspiration. And then what you did with it, again, what I've already said, these first three poems, you take inspiration and you come from a different angle that is out of left field, something I would never see, and it knocks my socks off. I mean, your perspective is unique, it's fresh, and it works. I mean, if you're trying, the whole point of poetry for many is to connect with their reader, and you do. You do on so many levels. This is a great write. So my question to you is, what is it like? What is your poetry desk look like? What is your process all about? How do you come together with putting together your work?
So every poem's different, obviously, but generally speaking, I feel like poetry should have the same kind of structure as prose, which is that you have a plot and a subplot, and they should come together at the end, ideally. So here, you know, you've got the this one, for example, which is a pretty simple poem. You've got my mom saying, or we're watching this movie, and you've got the Dalai Lama and reincarnation, my mom saying, you know, if I can't be Ginger Rogers, I'm not coming back. And those two threads of reincarnation and old Hollywood, they come together as time moves forward and she's dying in the final lines. And also kind of this one in particular, I liked the fact that the quote, Ginger Rogers did everything he did but backwards and in high heels, is kind of a declaration of the power of femininity, as opposed to the historical women as the softer sex, or, you know, whatever, but all that, you know, all that sexism. This is saying that women are front and center, and I think that that's really who my mom was. So I think that those two things, a plot and a subplot, and then emotion, those are the things that when they all come together, I know I've actually written something worth publishing. So that, I think that's my process, is to have a plot and a subplot.
I like that. I like that answer. No, it's very cool. Very cool perspective. Faizy, what do you have to say?
I thought this was incredible. I just naturally liked your mom based on the "if I can't be Ginger Rogers, I ain't coming back." I was like, yeah, I like this lady. And then, you know, so heartbreaking to – so I'm sorry for your loss. As you're running out of breath, you know, makes your reader – have a hard time breathing, as you know, that that she's ill, and then that isolation and not even being able to be there at the end, that, like Pam says, pulls at the heartstrings. It really does. Like, you feel it in your chest as you read it. The part where you're praying, I really respected how you're not praying to extend, because that would be for you more than her if she's suffering, and you're not unrealistic in the, like, oh, it's going to be, everything's fine, not complete heal, but at the same time, you're hoping for her to have peace and joy. Like, this is just, like, I don't know, I respect that part so much. It's just really powerful. And then you go back into the playfulness of Ginger next time. And I think framing it with that is something that makes the pain palatable, because it's like, it's a really painful piece, but it's so well done, that, like Jeremy said, you're laughing and crying at the same time, and it's a powerful poem when it can make you do both.
Great comments, Daisy. Yeah, before we do the next one, Richard, I know you've already told us a couple avenues. Do you want to make sure all your plugs are out there, your shows, your published work? Do you have anything else you'd like to introduce us to, so we know how to fully explore all of what you have to offer?
Yeah, so I do have a website. It's hold on one second. Let me just, it's been so long since I've gone there. Yeah, it's richard-weissman.com. And so everything's, I don't know if everything's there, but there's a lot there, and it'll kind of lead you to the YouTubes and everything else.
Perfect. Yeah, and if you didn't have a chance to write that down, go to Richard's profile on AP, and he does have a link to his website right there. So, cool. If you want to dive into more of Richard's stuff, please be sure to hit his website up. Your next poem, my friend, is up, Curse of the Ravenmockers.
Okay, so this was actually, gosh, who was it? Let me look at the notes here. Let's see. Oh, it's going to be buried way down here, isn't it? Well, definitely what I remember is that, yeah, right, Poetess Luna had a show, and they were featuring different myths and legends of Native American tribes. And I guess they were light on rights. So Laurent private messaged me and said, hey, if you have time, we need poems for this show. So I wrote this one. It's called Curse of the Ravenmockers, 1838. White soldiers came full circle round in the dead year they named 1838. Came spite our prayers to their thorny crowned god and right weighing of leafy gold tobacco. Powerless gainst their muzzle loading smooth born muskets, tears of red faced women and dream dead children echoed through our ancestral branches till brave warriors counseled me by secret fires. But even I, medicine man of the skull-topped mountain, knew my magic empty against their brown vests. So I offered the only weapon I knew, even as we trailed further west, exiled forever from cool river and maize. I called to the raven mockers, come, all ye who hunger, stay here, though we principal people must journey on. For these are your piney hollers. Hear then my sacred invitation to feast forever on dying white hearts of those who shall remain round our ancestral mountain hearths. Come and be satisfied, worthy foes. A strong rushing sound and fiery sparks filled dark mountain night. as raven mockers shrieked in winged laughter. Black feathered flight swirled eastward, joyous and free, cause they visioned timeless future, full of cold humming from dying white man's bleak machines, and old hearts abundant lay ready for their thieving. Entire nations without a medicine man to drive winged mockers out for even battle half as well as an exiled one like me. End of poem.
I love that. I love how that one closes. And I love the fact that you told us how your process works. And now knowing how you structure it almost like pro, I mean, you feel everything of what you explained earlier. So it's very cool to have had that insight before we came to this one. I don't do a lot of contests because I can't do it. I can't have the confines of, okay, you've got to write for this prompt and make it work. I feel too constrained. Obviously you don't. Obviously you're able to put together something that's beautiful, given whatever the prompt may be. But do you ever experience it? Do you ever fight against the dreaded writer's block? And if you do, how do you get over it?
So yeah, I did have a period in my writing where I had writer's block, and what I did was I just switched gears. I did something different. I switched from fiction to nonfiction and wrote a couple of business books that were published by John Wiley and Son. And one of them was actually a finalist for the 2012 Technical Analyst Book of the Year Award. So I think that's the key, as opposed to trying to fight and resist something that's not working and fight through it. I think that kind of doing the sidestep has been real successful for me. The other thing that I do if I've got writer's block is the old Jack Kerouac first thought, best thought automatic writing, where I just, you know, stream of consciousness. First thing that comes into my head, I put down on paper. And, you know, a lot of I did a whole book of those. Silent Echo was and actually The Moths, I did two books of that, where it's just automatic writing, me reciting it to a tape recorder. So those are my two tricks, so to speak.
I like that. I haven't heard of anyone doing. I like the fact that you switched genres to get you out of the block. But I guess to become a technical writer, I would have to know something about anything to be technically writing about it, wouldn't I?
Right.
I mean, there has to be some kind of inherent knowledge first for me to go do that. Very cool advice, though. I like that. Daisy, what are your thoughts? Daisy, are you with us? Are you on mute?
No, I think she had to go. I'm guessing she was getting pretty tired.
Yep, I imagine. Well, what do you have to say, Pam?
Oh, I think this is wonderful. I'm a big fan of mythology rites, and in particular, I really, really appreciate Native American mythology, as there are people who have gone through so many trials. And what I like is that this is so layered in its duality, and perhaps even more than duality, is the idea that it's not only mythology, but it speaks up against a people who have been, not against, but for a people who have been through a difficult history, and how sometimes you're pushed to your limits. Like, you want to resolve conflict peacefully, but that's not always possible when you're being bombarded by such prejudice and such hatred. I thought this was just a brilliant write. In fact, I added it to my amazing writes list because I figured it needed to be on a list of mine. I really like where you mentioned, so I offered the only weapon I knew, even as we trailed further west, exiled forever from Cool River and Maze, I called to the raven mockers. You know, wonderful lines there. And all right, let's see, my question for you is, I am going to say, well, obviously, you know you're a big fan of Joyce, know you're a big fan of Dylan Thomas. What other classic poets have influenced you, or, you know, like maybe not influenced, but either influenced or just that you truly appreciate their work?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, obviously, Dylan Thomas for the lyricism, Joyce just for the brilliance and innovativeness. I know it's going to sound cliche, but Shakespeare is a huge influence on me. And people forget that he wrote all those sonnets. In terms of other writers, big fan of David Foster Wallace, Infinite Jest, just such a brilliant mind. You know, it's one of those books that once you read it, it's kind of like it sticks with you. Other poets, though, I think the two great kind of, you know, monumental poets of the 20th century, Yeats and Eliot. And then I also really like Sylvia Plath. Such a genius. I mean, just, gosh. And not just her poetry, The Bell Jar, too, is just such a great book. So I could probably go on and on, but there's the big ones.
Oh, definitely. Great choices.
No, and I'm glad you say Shakespeare. Not enough of us do. I mean, he is the beginning, middle, and end to a lot of stuff, a lot of innovation, so I need to become more familiar with him. I've read some of his obvious stuff, but, yeah, I always need to remember to put him on the list, which is kind of – it's not cliche as much – maybe as it used to be. So, yeah, no, great list. Great question, Pam. Your next poem is one that I was really hoping we were going to get to tonight, The Warrior That Walks Two Worlds. So whenever you're ready.
Okay, so this is actually one of my older poems. It was written in a book of poetry, poetic prayer called The Spoken Word, Meditation and Action. And it's one that really resonates with mourners. So whenever someone passes away, a person that's in mourning that I'm friends with, I'll generally give it a little bit of time, but then forward them this poem, and they're always incredibly comforted by it. I've had people tell me that they actually put it on a wall, put it on a refrigerator door. So it goes like this. It's called The Warrior That Walks Two Worlds. I am the warrior that walks two worlds, one foot firmly planted in grief, the other in primordial willed continuance. Do not think these tears weakness. The one I mourn gives strength unbounded. Though sleepless, I shall not tire. Though I seem inconsolable, I will not be defeated. Now every breath is a testimony to their life, aspirations, and dreams. I am the warrior that walks two worlds, honoring my beloved departed, with an unyielding commitment to light and truth, with a passion for life renewed, to transfigure their death, to make it sacred through my struggling, to reflect all the love that was and still is their essence. Do not say the walk is too hard, too long, or too lonely. Awaken to the truth of your victorious warrior. Awaken to your unconquerable essence, pure life. And a poem.
I love that poem. Pam, would you start us off?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I love this poem, too. It's beautifully spiritual without being preachy, and I think that's so important. And I can definitely see how this would speak to people who are grieving, that idea that a loved one walks between the two worlds. And, you know, is that victorious warrior, is that essence of pure life? And this is wonderful all the way through, but I especially like now every breath is a testimony to their life, aspirations, and dreams. I am the warrior that walks two worlds, honoring my beloved departed. These are wonderful lines here, just beautifully written and very well done. And I wish I had another question, but honestly, it's, you know how it is near the end of the night. I just can't think of any.
Don't feel bad, Richard. She gets a tray of Jello shots in her by the end of the show, and I'm happy that she can even put together a sentence.
It is tough once you start approaching 2:30 Eastern. So I get it.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate you staying up so late with us. This is an amazing poem, and it's for a subject that so many of us struggle not only to deal with, but when you have someone close to you and you don't know how to console them, someone that's mourning, it's in my experience, it's been very awkward, and it's hard for a lot of people to know how to connect, how to console, how to comfort, how to sympathize, how to even talk to someone that's going through a tough time over loss like this. And what you did with this poem, it is those words. It contains all those needed words and feelings that I would want to hear when I'm going through something tough. You make some moves in this that I think are really cool. I like that you're the warrior. So you're already telling the person that is experiencing the loss that they are the fighter. They have the strength to deal with this grief that walks in two worlds. And that's where I got lost right out of your first sentence, because got lost in your first sentence, in that, yeah, you do get, as a person, when you lose someone, you get split into those two worlds. You're always with, to a degree, if you love the person, if the person meant enough to you, they're always with you, but they're not physically with you. So you're going to the other world with them through memories, through commonalities, through anything that brings you back to that person. So yeah, it takes a little bit with you. So I think in that opening itself, I was taken by this poem. I really like the concept and where you went with this. I missed your note that you wrote so long ago, because it definitely has the same feel of all of your other poems. I mean, I can tell it's by your pen for all the reasons that I said I liked the poetry earlier. I like the move. I hope it was intentional. I like the move in the third to last where you capitalize the word walk. It was a subtle bit of emphasis, prove that road is going to be a tough one, and it needs some kind of delineation. I like that. I really like what Pam said about the spirituality of it, because I agreed with you, with her, with that comment, in that you brought up the word light at the very end, which was beautiful, but also half a dozen lines earlier, you say commitment to light and truth. So, yeah, there's a spirituality to it, but it's a positive spirituality. It's nothing that's scary. It's nothing that's preachy, and it's nothing judgy. It's comforting spirituality, and that, in my opinion, is what people want to hear when they're going through a tough time. I like the fact that you also said that you give it as a gift, because I think Pam, we highlighted someone else that they said they did that. They gave someone a gift of a poem, and I think that's such a cool thing to do to people. I think I've tried it once or twice without any kind of. Maybe it speaks to my talent, but I've tried it once or twice with any kind of response. But I think that's such a cool thing that you do that continuously. If you have someone that you see is hurting and you have that right button to push and they come back to you and say, yeah, man, you did it for me. I mean, that's powerful stuff, something that you enjoy doing and writing poetry, and the fact that you can use it in a healing fashion through something as profound as this. I mean, I can't speak enough of it. I am very pleased that we got to this one, because this is the one that I thought this one was special. You're a very talented poet, but this one was special. And one last note that I would like to get from you while we still have a little bit of time is it's one of Pam's questions that I really dig. Can you give, let's say you are the all-knowing poet of all poetry, what kind of advice would you like to give the rest of us in terms of how to enjoy the craft?
Good question. I think that the key is, it's going to sound cliche also, but it's reading. I think that the more I read, the more I have to write about, and the better my writing becomes. I mean, that's, And I'm not, you know, some innovator. I think it was Faulkner that said, read everything. And I think Faulkner was genius. So yeah, I think the key is just reading and reading as many different types of writing as possible.
That works. Richard, I very much appreciate you staying up so late to join us tonight. I know it was a commitment, and you did a wonderful job. This is a wonderful peek into your poetry. Please, everyone, once again, we didn't get through all of Richard's set list. He picked his, I think it was top 11 poems that he wants to share with everyone. So please take the time to read the rest of his work that we didn't have a chance to review tonight. Also, you can go to his AP profile and see his webpage where you can see where the rest of his work is available. He is a very talented poet, and this was a joy to spend the evening with you, my friend. So thank you for spending the time.
Well, thank you guys for showcasing my work. I really do appreciate it.
Yes, very much. And Pam, would you like to sign us off tonight?
Absolutely. Wonderful show, Jeremy. Congratulations to Bex and Richard on being featured. Thank you, Faisy, for calling in, and to Jean for everything she does in the background. You are all just awesome, and I love you all. Have a good night, everyone.